women writers, Yiddish women writers, and we started to read and like, wow, this is something special. Like it really felt like holding a hidden treasure with so much interesting and beautiful poetry, but also like when you start to read about their lives and everything. So from that point, it developed to a bigger and huge project, including not only Rochel Korn then.
Hi, I'm Leah Roseman, and this is my podcast, Conversations with Musicians, which I hope inspires you through the personal stories of a diversity of musicians with in-depth conversations and great music that reveal the depth and breadth to a life in music. Ida Gilner is a very special musician based in Sweden, and in this episode, you'll hear the powerful story of her personal journey embracing different cultures and also the comforting power of music. Ida is a multi-instrumentalist and composer. Her main instruments are soprano, saxophone, piano, and voice. In the first part of this episode, we focus on her project Stolze Lieder, her songs set to the poetry of some of Yiddish's greatest women writers. You'll hear about Ida's childhood on the island of Aspero, forging her own path in different world music traditions, and the Finnish tango group Anna Heikkinen and Langstan Kapelle. We also talked about her solo album, Anna, dedicated to her sister, and how the process of writing and recording this healing music comforted her through the shock of her family's loss. I've included detailed timestamps for all the topics covered and for the music, and you'll find links to Ida and her musical projects in the description of this podcast. It's a joy to bring these inspiring episodes to you every week since 2021, and I do all the many jobs of research, production, and publicity. You can support this independent podcast in a couple of ways. Please take a look at the various links in the show notes.
Hi, Ida. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Hi. I'm glad to be here.
You're the first Swedish musician I've interviewed for this series.
Mm-hmm. How exciting.
And I have visited your city, and I want to make sure I pronounce it right. Do you say Göteborg? How do you say it?
Almost. Göteborg.
Oh, not at all. Göteborg.
Yeah, that's the Swedish way of saying it. Yeah.
Göteborg. Okay. It's written in English. It looks like Gothenburg. And I find this studying different languages. Of course, we use the same alphabet, many of us, in many different ways. So it's just, okay.
Okay, so you've been here. When?
In 2019 with my orchestra, the National Arts Center Orchestra.
Oh, really?
We played a concert, and I remember walking around and really enjoying your beautiful city.
Do you remember where you played?
It would have been the big concert hall.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have?
Nice. Yeah. Pity I didn't know.
Mm. So many interesting projects to talk about. I thought we could start with Stolze Lieder.
Yeah.
And this has taken a couple different forms, and maybe you want to talk about your most recent collaboration?
The project as it is now, it has taken different turns, but since 2 years ago, I now play with a violinist called Livet Nord, and I change from beginning to play the soprano sax in the project, and now I'm sitting by the piano and doing the lead vocals, and have Livet with me to play violin. So Stolze Lieder means obviously proud poems or proud songs in Yiddish, and we're focusing on several women writers. From the middle of the world wars, so in the beginning of the 20th century. I'm composing music to their poems, and we do it in different forms, like more proper concerts where we play the music, and I also talk a lot and tell us about their life stories, and put the poems and songs in a context, basically, for the audience. And we also have more like scenic performance, like music theater performance, where we also do some actions on stage basically it's the same music and we tell the stories, but in another context, you can say.
Mm-hmm. Do you find the audience reacts differently?
To the two different versions?
Mm-hmm.
It's quite hard to tell because we premiered the theater performance in May this year, mm-hmm. so we haven't had the chance to play it very much yet. But one can say during the concerts, it's more like a dialogue with the audience. Like I invite also them to respond in another way to what I'm telling, or invite them to sing along in different things. Actually, I do that in the performance too, but you know, it's a more relaxed way of connecting to the audience also, and invite them to the journey.
So Ida, yeah. I understand that you present these songs often in both Yiddish and Swedish.
Yeah.
But if you were on tour, you might do Yiddish and let's say English or a different language.
Yeah, we sing it most in Yiddish. I guess the song you heard, the single we released this spring, it's both in Swedish and Yiddish. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing, like if I sing the whole song or poem in Yiddish, we mostly like maybe read it in Swedish before or so, but we were recording a concert for Kles Canada, then we were reading it in English and obviously also talking talking in English in between. The performance I did with the other duo, the first duo constellation, we played in Denmark at a Jewish festival there, and then we actually translated the whole performance to English, mm-hmm. but still we're singing in Yiddish.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
I was hoping we could include a clip of Mein Heim for people to hear.
Yeah, nice.
Can we use the video for people watching the video or just the audio?
What you prefer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I will link in the show notes that video. So people listening to the podcast, which is most listeners, can just click on that if they want to see the video. So could you speak to the poem Mein Heim?
Yeah, so Mein Heim, Mitt Hem in Swedish, is the first single release of this new version of the Duo Stosselieder, where it's a poem by Anna Margolin, and I sing it in both Yiddish and Swedish. I have this beautiful, here. So we have collaborated a lot with a Swedish translator and researcher called Bela Engelhardt Titelman. So this topic, focusing on women, Yiddish women writing from this certain period of time is, at least in Sweden, it's very, very narrow and small topic. But at the same time we started with this, we got connected with Bela, who recently also started to focusing on women writers, Yiddish writers from the same period, which was amazing because she has given us so much knowledge about the writers and the context and the period of time when they were appearing. And she worked on this book, Detta är natten, This is the Night. It's a poem from Anna Magolin, where she has translated. They are in Yiddish here and Swedish here, poems by Anna Magolin. And I found this poem, Mein Heim, very early and felt so strong for it. It is really, It has a really sad and dark tone in it. Margolin is portraying or talking about this child, which is also very. It is a theme, a repeating theme in many of her poems. And the child watching at the world, like the grey world, watching people just going as blasé in the time. And I first composed it, like made the melody to the Yiddish lyrics, and then I was curious because I really liked her Swedish translation, and I basically tried to just sing it in with the same melody in Swedish, and basically it worked. I had to adjust some things, and I thought it was a really nice way to combine these. Yeah, and then with Liva's violin to it, and the single is 8 minutes, so it's not a really radio-friendly single, which wasn't our aim. But it's like a story, like a musical story, musical and instrumental ending that we're trying to capture the feelings in the poem.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, we'll be including part of that, and people, it'll be linked directly. People can hear the whole thing.
You're about to hear Ida Gilner and Livit Nord performing the first part of Mein Heim with poetry by Anna Magrolin. The full video, produced by Klez Canada, is linked directly in the show notes, and this will also be on their upcoming album next year.
Heiser wiegen sich und schwimmen lichtig grau mit feuchten Gärtner silberhelle Gassen und Menschen beschwellen von Tieren. Neigen sich, schmeicheln, verblassen. Wären und nicht wären, durch Regenbogen von Tränen. Wären und nicht wären, durch Regenbogen von Tränen. Sitzt beim Fenster in Livoneschein, Stromen die Haar wie dunkler Regen, verrackschend und lichtig suchen die Augen wie durch ein Wald die eigene Weite. Gestalt. Oh, was zitterst, Kind, wenn ich komm dir entgegen? Oh, was zitterst, Kind, wenn ich komm dir entgegen? Oh, was zitterst, Kind, wenn ich komm dir entgegen? Oh, was zitterst, Kind? Fuktiga trädgårdar, silver. ljusa gator. Folk på dörrtrösklar bugar och ler, och folket bleknar, bugar och ler.
Are you planning an album later this year?
Not later this year. We won't be able to finish it, but we have some booked studio time in January, so hopefully we'll like get to release an whole album next year. Mm-hmm. And actually next year it's in Sweden, like Yiddish is celebrating 250 years in Sweden, so there's a different things going on concerning regarding including Yiddish in different ways. So we will try to release the album also as a part of this celebration or anniversary.
And can you speak about Anna Margolin a little bit, that poet?
She was born in Brest, which is what's the word in English, White Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Belarus.
Yeah, in 1887, I think. She died 1952 in New York. She's one of the poems that I felt strongest for, like including her, like once you get to know her private life and life story. She was early like a traveler. She moved a lot, both with her family, but also afterwards, and learned a lot of languages. She had this really strong fire within herself from an early age. Like she was convinced that she had something. She really had something to give the world, she was convinced this was her. Goal with life, but also all the time balancing the expectations of being a woman and being a parent and a good wife. And I think those two in that time, a big contradiction was really taking her hard on her. Her psychological, her mental health and state of mind. So she was one. She went to New York and started to work on a newspaper and was surrounded by people like her. But then she got back to Europe and became a wife, got a husband, and got a little child. They moved to Palestine, and she was really trying to be that wife. But then, when the child was just a couple of months, she decided to leave. She actually wanted to take the child with her, but the husband didn't let her, so she decided to leave them both. And go back to New York to write, which must have been a really hard decision, of course. And also, when you read her poems, you read about this child coming. I mean, it not necessarily always her child, but yeah, you read between the lines about this. Hard feelings, she took a job at a newspaper and got this like women column, writing about women stuff, which she hated. She felt it was degraded as a human being, having to write about this. Things. Mm-hmm. And then in 1929 she released her first and also only book of poems, Lieder, which got different there's also like a scene we have in our performance, like some intellectual men sitting on this cafe and having the leader, the book in their hand, and say, "Who is Anna Margolin? We haven't heard about her before." Es darf sein ein Mann. It has to be a man. Because a woman can't write like this. So they thought it was really good, but it was too good for so it must have been a man, because women can't write like this. But she, Anna Margolin herself, she had so high expectations of this release, and like, finally I give the world this. She was devastated when she didn't get that, was acclaimed as much as she thought she would be, or thought she deserved. So the last 8 years of her life, she didn't go outside, basically, and locked herself inside, kept writing and kept writing letters with different intellectuals from all over the world, but said to her lover before she died that when I die, I want you to burn everything that's left from me, which he did. So it's it's such her life story, and I really relate to like this feeling of having such a strong power and fire inside, and also as a woman to balance between the life of a mother or parent and but at that time, 100 years ago, I mean, even if there's a lot of things to still work on when it comes to all these stuff, it was another time, and she must have been so strong to take these actions and decisions, but it must also have taken so much on her. She's really fascinating, and her poetry also feels so. If you didn't know, you couldn't tell it. They were written 100 years ago, because they are so, like, I think at least, so it's quite an easy language, really straight on, and it's a lot to relate to, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little bit about Margolin. Have you read her?
I've read a few poems. Like, I have a couple of anthologies, and it's all kind of mixed up in my head, and I did not know the story about her life, so I had not researched her. But there's a few similar writers, and you know, who are strong feminists, and
yeah,
and some of the subject matter is maybe surprising to people when you're reading. You know, very not what people would expect.
Yeah, there are many of them, which are so interesting.
Now, Livid is playing not a regular violin in this, but an unusual violin quintin, a Baroque instrument.
Yeah, she does. Which gives a wider range of the music elements and the tones. And so she can go quite deep, and also the vivid light sounds of the violin.
Yeah.
And also, and she's also using some electronical elements sometimes, like looping and an octave pedal or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, you had started this project quite a long time ago with another singer, Luis, is it Vaza? How does she say her name?
Yeah.
And you guys do have an album out of these songs.
Yes, so it was with the duo Ida and Luisa, and we released this album in 2019 called Stolze Lieder. And she lives in she's from Denmark and lives in Denmark. And yeah, during the pandemic and things happening in lives, she kind of yeah left the freelance work. So I had a period where I did this solo, and then yeah, a few years ago, Leave It came along, and the album Stolze Lieder turned into like a band name, Stolze Lieder. So we're now, yeah. So we also includes music from that album, and I've also composed some new material.
You've set songs to Katia Molodovsky's work and also Celia Dropkin. Do you want to speak to any of these other women at all?
Yeah, we can speak a little bit about Celia Dropkin maybe, because she's also very, I don't know as much about her as I do about Macaulay, but one thing that's very interesting and fascinating with her, I think, is she was, at least of the poets we've worked with, she was one of them who had, she had, I think she had five children and lived with the same man, husband, and really like, yeah, normative family life, kind of. But she was one of the poets all writing, like pushing the boundaries and the most when it comes to like sexual topics or like hidden desires and exploring yeah these sides, and this is really interesting, I think. Yeah, knowing she was living this a conventional more life makes you think, like wonder if the things she's describing in her poems, was it a parallel life she was living outside the family life, or is it her fantasies, or at least I don't know. Maybe one does. And one song, a poem I really like, Ich hab dich noch nicht gesehen, when she describes how she wants to, she said, I haven't yet seen you asleep. I would like to see how you sleep when your eyes is closed, when you lose the power of me and the power of yourself. I would like to see you, yeah, with your eyes shut and with no breath. I would like to see you dead. And yeah, it's so powerful, and you can read different things between those lines.
And you've written music to that poem, haven't you?
So yeah, we can include that if you like, maybe, or yeah,
Thank
or
you.
another.
Well, we talked about a little bit your first project with Louise. I was wondering if you wanted to include any clip or complete track from that album, or if you want to speak to any of the poems that you've set to music specifically.
Yeah, we can include one of those, because also yeah, since I play saxophone on these recordings and not in the new Stolze Lieder, so it's another sound. Could be good.
You're about to hear Ich hab dich noch nicht gesehen from the Stolze Lieder album with vocalist Louise Vaza, poem by Celia Dropkin, and Ida Gilner on saxophone.
Thank you. ich hab dich noch nicht gesehen. Schlafen die Gänse, will sich mir sehen. Wie du schlafst, wenn du verliest dein Macht. Über sich, über mir, über mir. Es will sich mir sehen, dich a Hilf lassen. Schwachen, stummen, es will sich mir sehen. Dich mit Augen vermachte an Atem. Es will sich mir sehen, dich ertäuten. Oi, oi, oi.
Now, I understand in 1945, thousands of Holocaust survivors were brought to Sweden.
Yeah.
And one of them was Rachel Korn, the poet, who was spent 2 years there.
Right. And she came, I think she came 46. She was invited by the PEN institution or PEN organization, how to say. So she stayed here 2 years before she moved to Canada. And that's the, like, basically that's entrance to this whole project, because we've been working a lot with the Yiddish community in Gothenburg. And in 2016, they were going to have a seminar about Rachel Korn and her also because her connections to Sweden. And so they asked us to compose music to one or maybe two poems to her to include in this seminar. And then we got like this big bunch of like a book of an anthology with several women writers, Yiddish women writers. And we started to read and like, wow, this is something special. Like it really felt like holding a hidden treasure with so much interesting and beautiful poetry, but also like when you start to read about their lives and everything. So from that point, it developed to a bigger and huge project, including not only Rachel Korn then.
I've studied Yiddish for a few years, and when I was on this same tour, when I was in Stockholm, we went to that beautiful library they have there, this beautiful round building. And I remember they had a Yiddish section because it's a protected language in Sweden. And it was just very emotional to see these old Yiddish books there in the public library.
Yeah. So Yiddish is one of five officially minority languages in Sweden that is protected or that the government and different basically the government has a responsibility to make sure the languages and the cultures from these five different minorities are staying alive and taking care of the old material, but also producing new material in different ways.
Do you know what the other four languages are?
Yeah, it's Finnish. I say it right in English. Meänkieli, which is like a north of Sweden. And Samic.
The Sami people?
Yeah, Sami people. So then we have, Romani too.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you hear Yiddish at all growing up, or was this just as an adult?
No, I mean, not in my family or so. But I first came across, heard Yiddish when I think I was maybe 10 or 11 or something, through some music I heard. Before that, when I started to play saxophone, my very first teacher teach me a traditional klezmer tune. I can't remember now which one it was.
Okay.
But I think I was 9 years at that time when I heard it. And with some certain styles of music, it just gets to your heart, strikes you. And it was, with this song, it was like this. And my parents caught up this new interest of mine and brought me to concerts and bought CDs. And so then I heard Yiddish and I was really confused the first time I heard Yiddish, because I felt I understood so much, but I shouldn't because I hadn't heard the language before. But then I got the explanation after, the consisting of so much German in it. And my grandma, she was from Germany and talked, basically talked German to us, and we just spoke Swedish to her.
Okay.
So I felt a really strong connection to the language, and together with the music, the Yiddish folk songs, it was a really strong experience for me that got stuck with me.
I'm just curious, so you don't have a Jewish background yourself?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. It came to me and became quite early a really big fascination and also a passion, and also thanks to my parents that took care of this, that they saw it made something with me. So also 2009 we went to the Jewish Culture Festival in Krakow for the first time. I've been there some years after that too, but which was also a really life-changing experience for me, because I brought my saxophone and surrounded by the atmosphere and the city and all this music, and I was young and really knocked backstage and joined jam sessions and got to know so many wonderful people that also you should go to Class Canada, you should do this and this, which led to different paths in my musical and personal life. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, this area that you're from, the Sodra Archipelago.
Yeah.
I looked it up. It looks so beautiful and unusual. And it was closed to tourists till the 1990s. I think tourists were not allowed to visit, maybe for security reasons or something.
Wow, you've really done your research. Yeah, it's, how do you say, archipelago?
Yes.
Yeah. With several islands, and I'm from one of the smallest, called Aspera, which is, it's 400 people all around the year living there. On another island in the archipelago, there was a military zone or something before. So I didn't know this when I grew up, but I really remember I think I was around 10 or something. You could see signs like on the ferries and in the city, like telling welcome in all different languages, telling like now everyone is welcome out there. But it was something I didn't, as a child, you didn't realize or didn't know why it was like that.
I'm curious, what effect do you think it had on you to grow up in a relatively remote and small place as a creative person, you know?
Since I was a creative person and started to play different instruments very early and joined orchestras and different musical activities. And obviously there wasn't space for that on this little island. So very early I had to go into the mainland. Which also made me, like on Aspera, there's a school from the first 3 years you can go in school there, and then you go to the bigger island until the ninth grade or something. But after these 3 years, I started school in the mainland because I had so many activities in the mainland, and also my grandma and Oma was living in the mainland, so. So I spend a lot of time at her place between my school and my activities, and also got like connections in the mainland very early, which I think had a big impact on maybe of the question you're asking. Because you can see. It's also interesting, these different islands have really different characters. One of the islands is really strong Christian, like religious island. And you can see they still have their own accent on this little island. And yeah, you can tell that people, not all, of course, but yeah, the world is not so big, one can say. And my island, Aspera, and also Brenne are the closest to the mainland. And I think you can tell those nuances of having a little bit more connections to the mainland, one can say, and not being as isolated.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And you have come from a musical family.
Yeah. My mom was freelancing musician. My dad didn't play or is not playing anything, but he was really, you know, you need the audience too, and the people who encourage you to and like to listen to it. So he was one of those. Yes, I guess very early I saw that it was possible to work as a musician, and my mom also very early invited me to join her on stage during her concerts and so. So I was kind of naturally growing into that, and didn't really think had other thoughts of what to do or when I was getting old. Mm-hmm. So it was a path from early ages.
So did you grow up playing traditional Swedish folk music as well as like classical and klezmer and other by ear more?
Yeah, so my first instrument was piano. I started to play when I was six, and that was more of a classical repertoire and playing from sheets. And then when I was nine, I started with saxophone, which was more oral based music, very big range of. We played blues and some klezmer tunes and also some Swedish or Nordic folk music. And then, when I was 15, I very early I started to like I didn't call it composed then, but I come up with my own music and, you know, improvising tunes. And I said to my piano teacher, I want to learn more improvising and more chords and so. And then she said, like, because I reached quite an advanced level of the classical music, and she said, oh, I can't teach you this, you have to find another teacher. And then it, it ran out in the sand, so I didn't find another teacher. So piano became my, more like my private instrument, where I composed, and I didn't use it like in public. So I focused more on the saxophone and also played guitar. Like in the beginning, I played alto saxophone and also a lot of baritone. From a very early age, me and my family went to a festival in Sweden called Falun Folk Music Festival, which was one of the biggest folk music festivals in Sweden, with like artists from all over the world, but also a lot of Swedish folk music. And that was the first time I saw the soprano sax in that context, and I fell in love. And from the day I got my soprano sax, I basically haven't played another of the saxophones, because it fitted all so good in folk music, and also like combining together with the fiddles and clarinets, range-wise and also sound. But when I was in the gymnasium, like in Sweden, when you're from like 15 to 16, mm-hmm. I went to a music school, and it was classical or jazz music, but I didn't feel home in any of them. So I asked my school if I could bring a teacher from outside, like a professional musician that I really looked up to, playing soprano sax in folk music styles. And they allowed me to do that. And so we focused a lot of Swedish and Norwegian folk music. And parallel, I had this interest in Yiddish music or klezmer, but didn't feel, also when I later on started at like music university on a program called the World Music Program, it was really hard to find teachers and also fellow students and friends to play this music with. Because it's not so big in Sweden. So that's when I started to apply for different applications to go abroad and to study with other musicians and to visit festivals, to join workshops and so. So to answer your question, like from a piano background, it was more classical, and later on improvised, and the saxophone. From a very early age, it was different folk music styles. Yeah,
I want to ask you about some of these early experiences abroad. But before that, I'd love people to hear some of your beautiful saxophone playing. So I wanted to switch to your project with Anna Häkkinen and the Finnish tango tradition. Yeah. There's one of, maybe you could ask her on that album, there's Apple Tango. There's a beautiful saxophone solo. Maybe we could include a clip of that. And of course, everything will be linked back to that project.
Yeah, sure.
So do you want to speak to that band and that project?
Yeah, so it's a quartet called Anna Häkkinen and Längtanskapell, which in English is like the longing kapelle. Yeah. So we began to play 2017, and on the singer Anna's initiative, during the Second World War and right after, there was a lot of Finnish children that was sent to Sweden alone. I think it was about 70,000 Finnish children coming alone to Sweden, and Anna's father was one of them. And so it was, yeah, when she turned 40 or something, she started to, she always knew she had this Finnish surname, but never didn't use so much more than that, basically. Mm-hmm. And she started to investigate in her history, and she never learned Finnish. And I guess this is a history that goes, that's very common, not only for her and, yeah, with that Finnish-Swedish background, but also when I, yeah, like in the Yiddish environment, of course. And so her way to get closer to the culture and to the language was to start to sing in Finnish. And she asked, me and the cello player Leonor and Larissa, the accordionist, to join her to investigate this. And we had basically, none of us had basically played Finnish tango before. The accordionist had it a little bit. So it was all, yeah, new to us. And so the music together with Anna's story and her searching for her roots has developed into a really like heart feeling project, and we are trying to approach the Finnish tango in like keeping our personal instrumental musical voices and doing our thing from it.
Thank you.
Hi, just a quick break from the episode. You may also be interested in my episodes with Polina Shepherd, Marilyn Lerner, Kavisha Matsela, Kiara Conway, Kirsten Agresta Copley, Sophie Lukacs, and Yale Strom, among so many. It's a joy to be able to bring these meaningful conversations to you, but this project costs me quite a bit of money and lots of time. Please support this series through either my merchandise store or on my Ko-fi page. You'll find the links in the show notes. For the merch, it features a unique design by artist Steffi Kelly, and you can browse clothes, phone cases, notebooks, water bottles, and more, everything printed on demand. You'll also find the links to sign up for my newsletter, where you'll get access to exclusive information about upcoming guests. Please check out my back catalog with weekly episodes going back to 2021. Now back to Ida Gilner.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I really enjoyed that, listening to that.
Thank you.
If we could go back to you mentioned you started to travel abroad and study abroad when you were young. Are there memorable experiences you want to speak to about that?
Yeah, like as I mentioned before, like this first visit to the Jewish Culture Festival in Krakow was a really important journey for me. And I was so overwhelmed of the open-minded and welcoming feeling. How old was I? 20 or something, like knocking on the backstage door to this jam session with all the artists I've seen during the days. like, oh, you're a musician, come on, come in. And also I didn't know so many of them before by names. So I guess this was a good thing for me because, you know, when you meet your people you're looking up to, you get shy or you know, you don't know what to say, but so it felt really like natural and warm to be there. And also the Swedish drummer Hampus, who plays a lot with Daniel Kahn and other musicians, he was there and he like kind of took me under his arms and introduced me to people and on this trip I also I went to a workshop with Deborah Strauss and asked her afterwards, can you meet me for a private lesson during these days, which she did, and also encouraged me to go further with this this music and many said you should go to Kliss Canada, and 2 years later I did, which also was I was there in 2 weeks in Canada, traveling by my own and my saxophone, and yeah, I'm really overwhelmed of the open-minded environment and by all the people I met during these visits. Like this blonde Swede trying to explore this culture and. Yeah, and then I also, I was in Canada, and the same year I graduated from the musical university here, I went to Berlin and lived there for half a year and studied with Christian David and Sanne Mörike and just tried to absorb the concerts and music there.
What was your experience in Berlin? I understand there's just so much going on. Was it a little overwhelming?
Yes, it was. And it was overwhelming, but also feeling of like this kind of easy feeling of a really open-minded culture and at least in the people I met and the environments there, and it's so easy to find music and like you meet one and you join this jam session here, or and you should go on that concert and call that person, and which I feel I'm not feeling the same in I think it's not the same here in Sweden. So it was some intense and overwhelming months there, but I could have stayed longer. But
and knowing German, do you think it helped you a lot being there?
No, not very a lot, because everyone, basically most people, speak English anyway. And once I was really trying to speak German too, but once they hear you have this accident of not being native or fluent, they're turning to English, and you don't get the chance to improve it. But yeah, of course, especially when it came to, you know, you should get an apartment and or to do you actually my husband, he went to hospital with certain things, and they were, but it was fine. But there I really was helped with my German. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't speak so much English.
Yeah. I'm curious, when you've studied Yiddish, do you know how to read and write Yiddish?
I started to sing Yiddish just by listening, like oral. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I didn't understand really what I was singing. But when we started this Trolls and Leader project, doing music of poems, I or we, my duo, we felt it was really important to make it properly. we wanted it to be a really like a good project, not some fast things. So that, but then I started to study Yiddish first with having like my Yiddish mentor, Staffan Böss, who is connected to the Yiddish community here. He was really close to us in the project, and we like the fast way he was, you know, learning us the basic in grammars and how you pronounce different things, and with my German background, it was a bit confusing in the beginning, because you have mm-hmm. it's helpful in one way but also not helpful, because and we all called him like, we want to do this musical phrase of these words, is it can we do that, can we, you know, stress this certain lyrics or not. And then when we worked that for like 2 years, I felt now I want to learn it proper for real. So then I started to study at the Jewish congregation. So I learned, I learned the Hebrew alphabet, and I can speak a little bit, but I understand more, much more than I speak, and I can read the original Hebrew alphabet if I have time, I've got time on me, and if it with the transliteration, it's easier, of course.
Yeah.
No, actually this summer I downloaded Duolingo, so I'm on my strikes, I'm doing my everyday practice.
Yeah, they have a different dialect on that.
Yeah, platform, it's really even more confusing. But at least I get it, because I, like back in 2018 when I studied, I learned, and I was so happy when I read like a review in Forvert in a written language, like it's like a whole new world opening up. But then, like, I didn't, continuing reading and learning, and I felt, wow, it's running away. But it's with this Duolingo now, it's really nice to just keep it, you know, active and alert. Yeah.
Yes, and well, not everyone may realize that Yiddish is written with Hebrew script. And when I first started to learn Yiddish, like I had heard it as a child in my family, but, you know, like a lot of people, the kids weren't taught Yiddish. But anyway, I did hear people speaking it a little bit. And so it's familiar. And in fact, my sister said, no, you have to learn to read and write. You can't learn a language without that. And she was right. And then it's funny now, because if I look at German, like in music, for example, and it's so similar, it's a Germanic language, although, you know, there's so many other elements to it.
Yeah.
But I'll see a familiar word written in English script. And it's just so funny to me, because I'm used to the Yiddish. And now I'm studying Dutch, which is also super, it's super related, of course, but written so differently and pronounced differently. It's super interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about your solo piano album, Anna.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was hoping to include a little bit. You have a beautiful one, Sommersang.
So, as I said before, piano was my first instrument, but I never really used it in public. I used to mention the piano as my soul instrument. Like it's where I compose and I like meditate, and it's really disconnected to achievement or the performance, I can say. Then in 2020, my dearest sister, she passed away very sudden and unexpected. And it was on a very special day. I just got my second child. He was 4 or 5 weeks. And I was supposed to have my first concert after he came. So my whole family and my older son and my husband and the new baby went with me to the city and the hotel. They were supposed to stay there when I was playing with this Finnish tango band. Saxophone. So it was a really big day, and everything went well, the concert and also with the family at the hotel. And I got back, and right after I got back in the evening, I got this phone call from my father telling my sister had died a few hours before. And everything got black and was falling apart, the feeling of really everything falling apart, because she was one of my closest person in life, and connected to the music and the album. What happened then was, after the biggest shock and the funeral and everything, I felt, it took me 8 months before I played the saxophone again, because when you're in this, you experience this shock and the mourning grieving process, it makes you, it's not rational at all. So one of my feelings was, I really can't play the saxophone, because last time I played, Anna lived. Was alive, and if I play something now, I you know, something happens. And also I was so exhausted, both physically and psychologically, so just the thought of grabbing the saxophone and the effort it needs to get the sound, I couldn't do it. So I ended up and found myself with the piano, time by time, every day. And we have a piano in our sleeping room. So I had my 5 weeks old baby close to me all the time in the sleeping room. And when he was sleeping, I went to the piano, and it was very comforting for me. I felt Anna, my sister, very close when I was by the piano, and a lot of music needed to come out. So it was really big help in my process, and I took really like step by step and always close to my gut feelings. So it all ended up in an album that I recorded and released 1 year after she passed away. So, and the album includes both music that was composed during this first year after she died, and also some really old music. And this Sommarsång I stilla tid that you will mention, it's one of, I think I wrote it maybe 20 years ago or something.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was like an honor song to the little island where we grew up. And I felt much for this tune in this state of mind, because I was thinking of our childhood at Aspera and the island, and running around on the cliffs bare feet together with her. And I rearranged it also for the album. Yeah, so it was a very special process, and a healing process that also opened up, I think, a music side within me that I, for a very strange reason, I, like, one part of me feels half while my sister is not here anymore. I think about her every day. I miss her so much. But during this process, one part of me also got healed, or I felt whole music wise and expression wise, because bringing in the piano to my musical and public life has really made something with me and opened up so many things, and the whole palette of me, like the expressions and the feelings and inside, got covered with this, I feel.
So, did Anna play piano as well?
No, she played accordion, okay, and a little fiddle too.
Okay.
So one of the tunes on the album called Flyga, like the only one where I sing with lyrics, there's a little bit accordion on it. It's me playing, but me playing on her accordion.
Oh.
Yeah.
We can include that as well.
Yeah.
For people to hear. Did she die? Was it an accident or?
Thrombosis. Yeah, in the lung. So, and yeah, she had a 3 months old baby and her husband found
them, oh my goodness,
her when he came. So it was really unexpected and no one can explain why this happened. So it's something we will never get to know more about.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I'd seen you write about Dear Anna, like in reference to the album, and I didn't know the story about your sister.
No. Yeah. So that's the story. Yeah, for me, when I was releasing this, I didn't have, you know, normally when you release an album, you work so for such a long time with it, and you make this like releasing plan and have a press list and PR and everything. And this process was so totally different because it was really like really step by step. So I got this feeling to, I want to record this maybe for myself and for my family or friends. So I recorded it, and then I thought, oh, no, I would like to put it on, like, you know, social streaming. So maybe someone else finds it likes it. And then I could have never expected, like, the receiving of the music and the album. And I feel very humble about that, like people writing to me, both people I know, but so many people I didn't know before or don't even know now, but that the music has helped them in certain ways. And it's very special and very beautiful and sad at the same time. Yeah.
In your life as a both a musician and a mother, I was kind of curious, like your approach with your children, with music and music in the family, and balancing everything out.
We're trying finding that way all the time. Like today, I was home with my 10 years old. He was sick, trying to do some computer work at the same time. I think as I said before, my mother was a musician, so I had that with me, that it's possible. And I've been encouraged from home. And then, actually, before I got my first child, he's 10 now, I was working half-time in like a music school, kind of teaching children, and half-time freelancing. For me, it was really hard to combine this, because I don't know, have you heard about something called El Sistema?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, so yeah. I worked with El Sistema.
Like you went to Venezuela or in Sweden?
In Sweden.
Okay.
So I started up an El Sistema school in a part of Gothenburg here from start, and I thought it was the best way of combining like my musical thing, but also my social interests in and working with children. And but for many different reasons. It was really hard to combine, and El Sistema work is really good, but it was also had really no boundaries. It was, yeah. So it took a lot of energy, and then I got my first child, and quite soon after that, I quit at this job and started to freelance full time. So I made a really little. So I started to freelance full time when I, basically, like 1 year after I got my first child. It's a ride, and it's always like me and my husband. He's really encouraging me, and. Of course, when I'm on tour, he needs to be there. And if I hadn't a husband who didn't want to be with his children, and so it would have been really difficult. But I also feel like many positive things that happened since I got the children, like the cliches of being more effective while working, but also in a good way, like having boundaries, like, oh no, I can't rehearse on during evenings anymore. We have to do it daytime because I need to pick up my kid at the kindergarten. And I can't sit by the computer all evening, which has been a really good thing, because mm-hmm. before it was all over the place and whenever.
Yeah.
Trying to balance the time of being away and taking also, like I've been doing more like composing work more and more the later years, because I love it, but also because it's a good combination with the touring life, so I can be home doing mm-hmm. composition works and so.
Do you have any upcoming projects in the next few months that you want to speak about?
Yes. I'm going in studio to record a new piano album with new music. And at the moment, I work a lot with a project together with an author who has, last year she released a book called I'm a Human Being, where she have done in-depth interviews with women in prison here in Sweden. So she asked me to compose music to this book. So we're doing like a performance where she's reading from the book about these women voices from inside the prison, and I've composed music that I play underneath her reading and also in between. And this is a project I really feel strongly for, because it's also, I guess it's a tendency all over the world, like politicians talking about tougher punishments and different things, and they are like instead of having one person in a cell in the prison, like doing having double up and everything, just and if you get close to these voices from inside, you really feel it's a bad idea to cut down on these soft values. Mm-hmm. So after our performances, we sometimes have talk leader, and we invite the audience to ask questions, and there's a really really interesting discussions coming up from that,
like a moderator.
Moderator, yeah, talk leader. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing, and I also have a really nice project with another saxophone player and a pianist playing Swedish folk music. So I have my different legs on, like the Yiddish, which is a big part, and Swedish and the Finnish and the piano music. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, your website will be linked in the description so people can see what you're currently up to, and the links to all your albums.
Oh, thank you. Great.
Thanks so much for speaking with me today. It was really inspiring.
Thank you. It was really nice to meet you and talk to you. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at leahrosemond.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support this series, that would be wonderful. Or you can browse the collection of merch with a very cool, unique, and expressive design from artist Steffi Kelly, with notebooks, mugs, shirts, phone cases, and more. I'm an independent podcaster, and I really do need the help of my listeners. All the links are in the show notes. Have a wonderful week.